Blog Talk Radio.
It's Sunday, and this is Pause IM Radio. We're excited to be on the air and hosted by Blog Talk Radio. Your hosts for today's program are Robert Brining and Jeremy Dunn. We'll be taking your calls and speaking with our featured member of the week. We encourage all of our listeners to phone in and share some of your life experiences. The number to call is 347-215-9442. Welcome to Pause IM Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Pause IM Radio. I am your host, Robert Brining. I'm joined with Jeremy Dunn. Jeremy, how you doing today, man?
I am doing A-okay.
You just made it in there, didn't you?
I did. I just made it in. Well, it was weird. My browser just went funny. And
Yeah,
it got a weird error. It said it's trying to refresh in a way that will never, I don't know, but it's back again.
Well, that's good to know. So I want to welcome everyone back to the Pause IM Radio Show. Tonight's topic, we're going to discuss actually the top 10 talked about stories of 2008 related around HIV and AIDS, and it's from actually pause.com. And there's a list of them. I'll put a link actually in the chat so people can actually view them all. But we're going to go down the list of them. But before we get to that, how's everything going with you, Jeremy? How are you making out over the last week?
Let's see. I guess no news is good news, right?
Right?
just been really – I've been busy with the day job, and then I've also been pretty busy with the board of directors, the AIDS service organization that I work that I'm working with. I am the – I don't know if I've mentioned this, but I'm the chair of the fundraising committee. So right now there's only two of us on the committee. So I'm trying to convince people that it's okay, one, to ask for money, and two, that it's okay to ask for money surrounding HIV. So there's a lot of people don't like to go and ask for money, and even more people don't like to talk about HIV. So when you put the two together, it can be kind of difficult sometimes. But
yeah.
So that's what I've been doing. I'm working on a letter writing campaign, and I'm getting ready. We're prepping for a 5K run in October. So I mean, it's just getting stuff planned out.
Oh, that'll be fun, huh?
Lots and lots of work. I don't know how much
5K
fun I'm
run.
Have, but yeah, I won't be running.
No,
I don't run unless somebody's chasing me. But we're going to go and get folks to run, and then it works very similar to an AIDS walk. People pledge, and we raise a little bit of cashola. We're also going to do a Vegas night, and I'm going to put a little spin on things, and I'm thinking about, and you tell me what you think of this, for Vegas night, have all the dealers, the card dealers at the card, mm-hmm. or all the at the gaming station, they're all going to be drag queens.
That's always fun and always easy to raise money that way.
Exactly. I think it would be a hoot. So
yeah, we have a gay bingo here in Philadelphia, and they do the drag queens hosted, and you know it's the same 10 that are there every month, and they just do a different theme. You know, they do Grease or Mamma Mia or something like that, and they all dress up, and it's really cool.
Yeah. Well, they just had gay bingo for the first time again. They don't do it very often. But the queen that does it, her name is Shalita Ham, and they read the numbers so fast that you can't keep up. And if you have a premature bingo, they take you up on stage and tear up your cards. And
they do it here every month, and it's with the Philly AIDS Fund that's out of Philadelphia,
right.
And we one of the years we put together, I was actually the vice president of my soccer team, which is the Philadelphia Falcons. It's a gay soccer team. And we actually sponsored a game, and we actually went up on stage, and, you know, we talked about our soccer team trying to recruit people who were there supporting it. And all the money, of course, goes to, you know, the AIDS organizations and stuff like that. But they do all sorts of things, like when it's 069, you got to stand up and throw your hands up and go, 069. You know what I mean? This is like they do all different weird things, which is really cool to get you involved.
That's funny. That's
yeah.
Very funny.
It is a hoot. So the good thing, let's see, some news that's going on with the Paws I Am communities. We have over 300 members now, so I'm really excited about that. I didn't think we'd get up there that fast, considering this news site's only been up for probably less than 6 months. So I was really surprised to get up there, so I'm excited with people inviting their friends and stuff like that. So that's pretty cool. Other than that, I figure we just go right into the topics. Is there anything else you want to mention real quick before we go into them? Because there's 10 of them.
Anything you want to mention? No, I don't think so. Just get folks to, you know, start talking about some of these things because, you know, 2008 we had, there was a lot, and there's obviously, you know, a couple of other stories that we'll talk about towards the end that aren't listed here that caused quite a stir in 2008, so we'll talk about those too, maybe.
Yeah, some of these I'm looking at. I remember a lot of them, actually, because I get the magazine every month, so
I used to get it.
Comes out. Yeah, it's weird. Is it bi-monthly? Is that when it comes out?
No, it's 11 months. It skips. I think it skips February or something like that.
I don't know. I feel like I'm always waiting for my magazine to come. It feels like it never, like, I'm always waiting for it to come. Like, it's coming, and then, like, it comes, and it's, like, in the middle of the month, and I'm like, well, it's a little late now. I went online. But these actually are the top 10 most talked about stories this year on Paws.com, and they are ranked actually by the amount of comments that are on. So I don't know. You know what I mean? That means they're the most talked about on the site, but there's obviously, like you said, going to be bigger ones that some people didn't mention too much on.
And it's not this year. It's from 2008, so from last year.
Okay, I see what you're saying. Let me just speak here. I'm just trying to open it up because I'm going to actually just check it out here. The first one is on January 30th of 2008, Paws.com did a story on experts say positive people on effective HIV meds are not sexually infectious.
Right, and that one ties directly into another one that came out just a few months later. Which one was it? Maybe the same one. But, yeah, where the Swiss looking at the wrong thing. The Swiss Federal Commission did a study, and they found that that seriodiscordant couples, in other words, you know, if you're HIV positive, in a here's the caveat to all of this. They stated the HIV positive people in heterosexual seriodiscordant couples are virtually not sexually infectious if their viral load has been undetectable for a minimum of 6 months. So they don't talk about, you know, homosexual relationships or anything like that, but it's talking about that if you're a heterosexual couple, one person is negative and one person is positive, they're saying that if you are on medication and your medication has dropped your has brought your viral load down to undetectable for 6 months or more, that you're virtually not sexually infectious. So, you know, I think the jury is still out on that one.
Yeah, that's a little risky even to write about. Because, you know what I mean, like, you've got to be very cautious with things like that.
Well, you have to be cautious with it, you know, because you don't want to give people a blank slate, you know, because there's other things out there besides HIV. You've got syphilis and gonorrhea and all kinds of things that are out there that can be just as just as bad.
Right.
If not worse in some cases, you know. But yeah, so that caused, you know, lots of controversy, especially over here when we're really trying to get people to use condoms, to be safe in their sexual practices, and then this story that comes out says,
"Congratulations!
Oh God, what is that?
Is that a pop-up window?
I don't know where it's coming from.
So what are you waiting for? Claim your free?
Oh, that's weird. I don't know where it was coming from. I didn't touch anything."
That's weird.
My computer's talking to me. Congratulations. Well, I just won something, apparently. You probably have to go sign up for, those ads and everything.
Yeah.
I have no idea what that was. So I just muted my computer so I didn't have to worry about it. But, yeah, congratulations. So that was that particular story is interesting because when you talk about it, it's like, am I hearing what I think I'm hearing? Am I really reading this?
Right.
But the commission also, you know, later in their story did say that they still want people to continue to follow the CDC, the Center for Disease Control Prevention, of current recommendations for HIV prevention strategies. In other words, use condoms.
Right.
Be safe in your sexual practice. It's controversial. And I guess number two, we'll just jump over to number two, is AIDS, not a heterosexual disease. That came out originally on June 9th of 2009. June 9th, 2008. Thank you. Kevin DeCock, director of the World Health Organization Department, said AIDS should not be a concern for heterosexuals outside sub-Saharan Africa, and that AIDS should remain at the forefront of public health concerns, with prevention efforts focusing on men who sex with men. That was kind of just that statement alone was kind of a slap in the face to all of us who are, you know, really working hard to get the word out there that AIDS is not strictly a gay disease. It's not just men who have sex with men, but it's everybody who, you know, if you're sexually active, you're at risk.
Right.
So that was a, you know, his, that's just, that statement was just, it was hard for some people to digest.
Yeah, it kind of makes people like, let's say Marilyn Brown, people like her, or that Sherry Lewis who has one of the stories here, people like that who are heterosexual and are HIV positive, it kind of is a slap to them. And them, like, going out there and putting their story out there and spreading awareness, it's a real, like, punch in the gut.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's just...
Yeah, because, you know, and DeCock, I love his name. Kevin DeCock. He made the declaration despite... a report that his own organization, from the World Health Organization and UNAIDS and UNICEF, issued a week prior, showing that 3 million HIV-positive people worldwide are getting life-saving antiviral treatment in 2007, and 2.5 million became infected. Here he is. He's a person in a position of influence, and he just makes a sweeping statement that's contrary to the report that came out of his own organization. So it's that mindset.
Yeah.
It's really ignoring the facts.
Right.
That's what it is.
See, moving on to the next one. The next one was actually published on March of 2008, and it was a diagnosis story about a woman named, let me see what her name is, by a woman who disclosed her status to a plastic surgeon. And she ended up receiving some discrimination and some stigma in regards to her status when she, you know, wrote everything down. And she said she has so many pills that she has to take that when she goes to the doctor, she literally has like a little chart that she, you know, safety pins to her papers instead of writing everything out. And she's very organized, and she said she's open about everything. And her actually the plastic surgeon was actually recommended by her infectious disease doctor. So it came highly recommended. So she thought, you know, going there, she should be able to feel comfortable being open with her status and not have to worry about things like that. And as I scroll down here, I'm just trying to see what it was that she wrote the medical board and stopped the doctor's $200 credit charge that had made herself already have a good cry while she was there. The board decided that it lacked evidence because she tried to take it to the board to have something done to this doctor, you know, and she even educated the doctor and said, you know, there's more than just HIV you need to worry about. There's other infections like MRSA and things like that that you need to worry about doing, working in a business like this as a plastic surgeon. So all she wanted was an apology from the doctor is what she said, and she didn't even get that. But she was proud that she stood up and took it with dignity. The doctor left his mark on me, but I plan on living for a long time with fewer permanent scars. Because, you know, every time when you get rejected, it's another, you know, scar that comes on you, and she kind of used that as a play on words for her,
right,
you know, plastic surgeon. Did you read about that one, too?
Oh, yeah. I've read most of these.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I did.
She was going in to have some scars, cooking accident burns, treated, and so it was, and I guess the doctor's wife forbade, the plastic surgeon's wife told the surgeon said that forbade him to treat people living with HIV because she was afraid that he'd bring it back into their household.
Huh.
So, doctors.
It makes you wonder because it's a doctor.
Well,
the doctor should know.
But not all doctors do. And the reason why is because it's not their specialty. You wouldn't go to, you know, a knee doctor for emergency medicine. And you probably wouldn't go to an emergency room to, I don't know, what wouldn't you go to because, you know, it's their specialty. You know, I've encountered that in an emergency room, you know, where I've told them I'm HIV positive. And
right.
They said, who's your doctor? And I told them the name of my doctor, and they said, oh, well, that's not your family care. That's not your, how can he be a primary care? He's an infectious disease doctor. I said, he's my primary care. So
right.
There's confusion in the medical community too, so that's why it's so important that HIV positive people we be the experts in our own healthcare, and we understand the science behind it all, and we have to understand we almost have to go in and educate doctors sometimes. And it's really important that a doctor understands what you're telling them. So,
right, I would just assume that a plastic surgeon, somebody who goes under the skin, breaks skin, blood is there, they're playing with everything inside your body to make you look better. I would think that if I'm touching all that, I would educate myself in things that could harm me.
Well,
you know what I mean?
You are. here's what it really boils down to. You should always take the same precautions with everyone, regardless if they're HIV positive or not.
Right.
So because the chances of, you know, of infecting the patient with something else, like MRSA, that's usually what people get when they go to the, when they're in the hospital, is some kind of, you know, antibiotic resistant infection. So it's actually somebody just asked a question in the chat room, should a doctor treat you knowing you have HIV? Here's the great thing and the bad thing about medicine. A lot of these folks are private practice. They can refuse your treatment if they want to, because it's private practice. Now, if you go into a hospital, I believe they have to treat you. But should a doctor treat you knowing that you have HIV? Should they?
It's kind of, to me, I mean, I think it's really important that if you're at a place and your doctor makes you feel uncomfortable and doesn't want to treat you because you're HIV, you have every right to get up and walk out and find somebody who will, because there are really good doctors out there that will treat you and will understand the situation that you're going through. I think that a doctor should treat you, and if he feels uncomfortable with it, the doctor should say something and, you know, instead of making it uncomfortable the whole time you're getting treated for your HIV, you know, find tell the doctor from the beginning, if you're not comfortable, let me know, I'll find someone else.
And I think the majority of doctors out there would treat you.
Right.
I think any doctor worth the degree that they've got will go out and learn about it. And of course they did take an oath, you know, they take an oath to do first do no harm, not to actually treat you. The oath to do no harm could mean that, you know what, I'm not comfortable with treating this person. I wish you would go to somebody else under someone else's care. You can interpret the oath that way as well. So first do no harm. I would respect the doctor more if he said, I don't think I can treat you. You might want to find another doctor. I think I would respect him more that way than just flat out refusing, saying, "Ooh, no, you're bad." Ooh. But it's, you know, again, it's all in, it's how it, you know, I think it's, you know, delivered to someone, but it's important for patients to understand what they're going in for, what they have, what a patient's rights are as well. You need to be a patient expert, if you will. You need to be an expert.
Right, and one thing that Cowboy Larry once said on when he called in was that you should interview your doctor like you're interviewing him for a job.
Absolutely. Well, you are interviewing him for
a
job.
But a lot of people
you're
don't do that. They
him,
just go to the doctor, you know?
Right, and you're paying him for a service. Flat out, so you are hiring this person and going to trust this person to work with you in your medical decisions, in your health care. So that is, you know, very, very important for all of us to understand.
Absolutely. Let's see what the next one is. Where are we?
HIV behind the music.
The next one is, yep, HIV, yep, you said it. It was featured, actually, it was the cover story of the May 2008 issue of Paz. And Terrell interviewed a 54-year-old former pop star, Sherry Lewis, about her life with HIV. Now, I never knew, actually, who she was before this article came out. Did you hear of her before?
I didn't know who she was either, to be quite honest with you. I'm like, I don't know who this is.
It was
an interesting story, though.
Yeah, she, having survived the disease as well as sexual abuse, time in a psych ward, and intravenous drug addiction, Lewis, a self-described Jewish suburban girl, is now a voice of female empowerment as a host of a podcast called Straight Girl in a Queer World, on which Lewis interviews HIV educators, advocates, and HIV-positive celebrities. But she's a former singer from, what is the name of that group? Let me look.
I don't know.
I'm trying to think.
I did read this.
No, I read this when it first came out, but I don't remember the name of the group. I want to say the Ramones.
I can't remember the name of the group either. It wasn't the Ramones. Was it Patti Smith?
Sherry Beachfront, lead singer. Oh, it's killing me. I can't believe it.
Get Wet.
That was the name of the group?
I can't remember the name of the group either. Oh, my God. I think it was Get Wet.
Yeah, it was.
Name it.
Yep, it is. Get Wet.
All right.
So I never heard of her before that.
Yeah, I had never heard of her either.
And I never heard of Get Wet.
But, you know, she had an interesting story. I thought it was a very interesting story.
Very long story.
This
is one of the ones I skimmed through.
For you.
But there's a quote that she has here, which I thought was very cool. At the bottom of the article, it says, "I have my dark moments, but first I had to address why I put myself in these situations that put me at risk. The key is moving through the losses. I don't have to like it to accept it, but I have to accept it in order to live my life and make room for other things." Which I thought was amazing, a little quote from her.
You know, that is a good quote, actually. And we all have, regardless of, and I think what her story is evident of is the fact that you can have a life and a career with HIV. If you're willing to make it happen, and you can, and you're willing to fight this thing, then you can still have your life. HIV doesn't have to take it away from you.
Right. I mean, she's, and everybody hits a different, you know, rock bottom when they realize and, you know, have an awakening of spirit. But, you know, she is surviving HIV. She went through sexual abuse. She was in a psych ward. She was drug addicted. And now she's out there doing something positive with her life and, you know, doing this podcast where she puts, you know, people that are active in the AIDS community out there and sharing their story. And I just think it's a wonderful thing. I've actually listened to her podcast once off of her blog, which, it was very interesting. It's a different approach. You know, she's a straight girl, so it's a little different than my approach, but I found it very, you know, very, very educational for people to check out.
Well, you know, Rob, you're about as close to a straight girl as I know. Hey, if anybody's out there listening, you want to give us a quick call, give us a call at 347-215-9442. And give your take on what you think was one of the most talked about stories in HIV in the year of 2008. We'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, right. Let's see. Moving right along to the next one. Aging Grace. Facing the uncertainties of growing older with HIV.
Yeah, because we're living longer with it now.
So we have to first worry about getting old with it.
Exactly. Well, you know, they were saying there was actually a study that was released talking about 20-year-olds who were just diagnosed and who went on to antiviral therapy. God, what was it? They were living longer. So you talk while I look for this thing, because it was an interesting story.
The I'm trying to see, because this is one that I skimmed through. Of course, you know, there was a long one. It wasn't a short, little, easy one for me to read and have an opinion about. It was something I had to sit down and. Let's see. Researchers have observed one profound difference, however, between the mental health of aging HIV-positive adults and their negative counterpartners. Whereas people in the general population tend to complain less often of depression as they age, those living with HIV have rates of depression that remain elevated into their older age, which I thought was something that I kind of, you know, you kind of figured out, I have my depression moments, and I can only imagine as I get older that they would, you know, seem to get worse because I'm getting older that way. But a lot of things is, one of the big things that I'd like that they mentioned is here is the sense of social networking.
Right.
The one point it says, the one thing the study urgently reveals was, regardless of how well a person is doing medically, dealing with life on his or her own is going to be that much harder as you age. And so, as it's been with many other issues over the course of this epidemic, the best hope for a brighter future will probably lay in the bonds of that of HIV-positive people from which each other, bonds that over the years have brought thousands through sickness and uncertainty and changed policies and society in ways many thought impossible. He agrees, saying, I think that what ends up happening is that people find a lot of strength in connecting and talking to other people that are in the same boat that they are, and that they should find use in venues such as support groups and online forums like the PosIM community that help each other in support. So I thought that was kind of interesting that they mentioned that it was very very important to surround yourself with people that are like you. You know, it's very important to connect with.
It's so important to do that. And, you know, because who else is going to understand it more than people who are going through it, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, you
know,
so,
nobody knows what it feels like to wake up and worry about, you know, are your counts going to be good this time when you go to the doctors, and somebody who's actually getting up and worrying the same thoughts.
Exactly. Okay, I got to find – this is gonna kill me because I just read this story today. No, I can't find it, darn it. And the reason why I want to pull it up is because it's got some numbers in there that I thought were really, really interesting, and I cannot find it.
Oh, you don't have the article in front of you?
No, I lost it. I don't know what I did with it.
Here, I got it. I'm going to put it in the chat.
What do you have?
There you go. That's the article.
No,
is that the article you?
I don't think so.
The one that we're doing?
No, that's not the one I'm looking for. The one I'm looking for is a study that they did about us living longer, and they said that those who were diagnosed in 1993 at the age of like 20, or, and I'm probably going to get this wrong. That's why I wanted to find it. Those of us living longer, it was basically, if you started meds, antiretroviral therapy, they were seeing those people live longer to around 69 or 70 years old, where those who didn't take meds lived only to about 52. So, and that was within the first, and that's not taking meds. They said that was not taking meds within like the first year or first year of diagnosis, I think. So they were talking, they did a study, and they were showing that people are living longer and getting and growing old, but most of them were taking their meds.
Well, that's a good sign that we're living longer. You know, it shows a lot of hope to people that are newly diagnosed. So, you know, kudos for that.
now, the downside of all of that, you know, there's always good, there's always bad with good.
Yeah,
is
right.
Because the antivirals, you know, we don't know what the long-term effects are yet. So some people are getting some premature, are aging prematurely and getting, in their 50s, are getting what would be considered geriatric issues earlier. So, and they don't know if that's HIV related, related to the medicines, or they just don't know yet. So they're still trying to figure that out. So there's a lot of unknowns out there with this whole virus, even though we've made such great strides over the last, 18 years that we've had antivirals, is that right?
You're asking the wrong person about how long they've been around.
So since 1996, so yeah, you know, going on 18 years or something like that, that HART, highly active antiretroviral therapy, has been out there. So we've come a long way, but we still have so far to go. Aging is just part of this. You know, it's part of, you know, a lot of, you know, and we have to look back and say and think that, you know, in 1983 and 86, when folks were diagnosed, they didn't get to see, you know, 3 years from their diagnosis,
right.
They were dead within 3 years. So, I mean, it's a blessing and a curse, this getting old thing. And for a lot of us, it's a blessing because, it's the meds that are keeping everybody alive.
Well, the thing is we all get old, so we just have to look at it. Some of us get older faster, right?
Oh, God, you have no idea.
So moving on to the next one, let's see. The next topic was actually an HIV doctor's dilemma. Do you want to do this one or do you want me to do it?
You can go ahead.
Okay. This was published on May 12th, 2008, and it was actually published in the Los Angeles Times. And Mark Siegel, a doctor, examines an ethical debate faced by many doctors who learned that an HIV-positive patient may be concealing his status while having unprotected sex with a negative partner. Dr. Siegel recounts a story of a patient they call Carlos who contracted HIV from one of Siegel's patients. Michael, we'll call the second patient. Michael knew that Miguel was HIV positive, but Carlos didn't. After finding out that he was HIV positive, Carlos asked the doctor if he had known that his partner had HIV. He wanted the doctor to ask him, and the doctor replied, "I can't say." According to the article, the encounter for Siegel raised questions about the tension between a doctor's obligation to confidentiality and his moral obligation to help prevent others from becoming infected with the HIV virus. So it just makes you, it puts the doctor in a spot, but I still think, I don't know, like I'm kind of torn on what he should do.
I think it's, for me, the answer is fairly simple. The doctor should not be getting in the middle of all of that and tell someone of someone else's status. Now, that said.
Now.
A doctor could counsel, you know, all a doctor can really do at this point is counsel his patients, counsel his or her patients on what the right thing to do is. Legally, and ethically, he shouldn't say anything. You know, it's confidential. My doctor should not be discussing anything with anyone unless I have given consent. Plain and simple. I mean, it really is that simple. So if this doctor is having problems with this, he needs to go back to, he needs to talk to his patients about it and explain that, look, you know, you need to be safe, you need to be doing, you know, but you can't name names and details and things like that. So unless he's been given consent.
There's a roundabout way that he can.
Sure, there is.
You know what I mean? That he can educate Miguel on the situation and not exactly point out that Carlos has HIV. You know what I mean?
Right.
By, you know, just right. Talking regular procedures with your doctor about having safe sex. So, I mean, you can do it without actually saying, you know, he has HIV, so be careful.
Exactly. And I would be pissed. Because what if we hadn't had sex yet? You know, I mean, there's all these what ifs, right? I would probably sue the doctor, frankly. It's like, I didn't give you consent to tell anybody else.
Right.
So, you know, it is a moral dilemma, but
there's ways around it.
there are ways around it. I mean,
yeah.
There's lots of things to be talking about. I mean, to get around it and talk about it. But yeah, I mean, for me, the it's pretty black and white. You don't have consent from the patient. You don't talk about it. Period.
But then I look at it and I go, okay, what if I was Miguel and I was sitting there and I was, you know, in a relationship with my boyfriend and we were, you know, having our relations and I didn't know that he was positive and the doctor knew that we were a couple. Would I want, like, if I was Miguel, would I want the doctor to tell me or would I want my boyfriend to tell me? You know what I mean? Of course you want your boyfriend to tell you, but if he's not going to tell you, don't you, I don't know. It's just very weird.
No,
you know what
because,
I mean?
Because here, if the doctor tells you about that person, what is that doctor? What is the same doctor telling other people about you?
Right.
You know, I mean, it comes down to it's not the doctor's place unless you've signed over consent to say, doctor, you can speak with, you know, Miguel and tell him everything about me.
Right.
It's that black and white.
Okay, moving right along.
I understand him emotional. Moving
right
along.
No, I totally understand, but I want to make sure we get all these in. And if you guys are out there and listening, you can call in and share any comments on any of the stories that we talked about tonight. The phone number is 347-215-9442. Even if we didn't even mention one of the stories that you think was maybe the biggest, you know, call and let us know what you think is bigger than what we've mentioned. Maybe, you know something we don't know. The next one moving on is actually, this was pretty big. This was in October, and I remember it kind of went everywhere. I mean, I saw it all over the net that a radio show in, I want to say, Minnesota actually accused Magic Johnson of faking his HIV. Do you remember that one?
Yep.
And as I'm looking at it, you know, it says, one of the guys says, you think Magic faked, like, from what I'm reading, the guy says, you think Magic faked AIDS for sympathy, Baker asked. And it says, the other co-host replied, I'm convinced that Magic faked AIDS. Perry later replied to Johnson as the only AIDS guy ever, only cured AIDS guy ever. There was a big statement that was released by Magic Johnson saying that he was disappointed in what they said, and obviously none of it was true. It's just a shame that people do that. In response to the media attention, on the radio show host actually said that it wasn't even anything that was news. It was just saying their comments. They were just 3 seconds of radio that were out of a 4-hour show that it wasn't even something that they were like breaking news on. It was just something that you can just laugh about in conversation, which I thought was, again, kind of a slap in the face. It's not just something you just throw around, people faking their statuses.
Right.
Especially for attention.
Just because of its 3 seconds out of a race. I mean, look at the responsibility you have. And so let's look at it this way. Let's say that because we're doing this particular show,
right,
and we made a comment like that, or something similar. It's regardless if you're an entertainer, or you know it's comedy. Sometimes people get their information through those routes, and whether you know, even though it might, you know, somebody's making a joke or something, it's really, it's irresponsible, plain and simple. It's just irresponsible.
It's very disgusting.
It is.
You know what I mean? At least me, you know, Jeremy, me and you, we're doing the same thing, but we're out here and we're, you know, encouraging people to get tested and we're trying to, you know, share stories where people can relate and feel more at ease and more comfortable in their own skin. And just for people to just go out there and just do stupid shit and say lies is just something that doesn't make sense to me. Why waste your time on stuff like that when you could be out there actually helping people? I mean, that's why we do it. We do it to help people.
Right, exactly, and we can laugh, we can joke, but we also have to remember that we have a responsibility, and that people are listening, and
right.
we don't want to give them, you know, bad information.
Right.
Which
it's all about
leads
helping.
Us into the exactly, yeah. Which leads us into this next story: the HIV positive man sentenced to 35 years for spitting.
This was a big one.
Where do I even begin with this one?
this is one of those, what the hell?
the guy, Willie Campbell, is HIV positive. He was sentenced 35 years in prison for spitting in the face of a Dallas police officer. They were able to convince a jury that
his spit was assault with a deadly weapon.
It was assault with a deadly weapon.
Trying to get it out for you.
it is. I mean, I'm just trying to. I was like, you've got to be kidding. Even though we know that the virus cannot be transmitted through saliva. And we know how the virus is transmitted. It boggles my mind. I mean, how can someone be sentenced for 35 years in prison for spitting? It's just, wow.
It cracks me up. Every time I read it, it reminds me of rewinding in my head and watching Pumpkin spit on New York on from VH1. Like, that's what I keep seeing in my head, and I'm like, they didn't arrest her. You know what I mean? I mean things like that. Like, 35 years for spitting, it just, to me, it's ridiculous. And it's just so absurd because people kill people and they don't even get 35 years.
And then the other part of the story is that I think he was mentally ill as well. And he also did this before, too. Yeah. But it's mind-boggling to me that 12 jurors would, you would think that, you know, in 2008 would know that you cannot get HIV in that method of trans. You know, it was just I can't believe it.
Yeah, and there's a little disclaimer here also that says that there has never been a documented case of HIV being transmitted by an HIV positive person spitting on another
spitting.
Person.
Never.
You know what I mean? It doesn't make any sense to me.
It's ridiculous. I mean, and it's a frightening state that, well, and here's the other thing. The precedent now has been set. And I think that's where some people don't get is that these court cases set precedent. So someone else in some other state or, you know, will see this and then they'll use it. It opens a door. And if they say, well, it can happen there, it can happen here. So again, it's just mind-boggling. It's like, oh God, you know.
And it was so big, if I remember correctly, in one of the PAWS magazines last year, they actually had this big piece in the back of it asking everybody who read the magazine to write a letter to the article. I'm hearing somebody talking all of a sudden. Okay. On the article, to write a letter to actually this judge and to make sure that they lick the envelope with their HIV-positive spit completely. And, like, you know, they made this – they, as you wrote your letter to, you know, to the judge who – or the jury, or I forget who it was who they were writing this letter to, but to include their spit heavily on the envelope is what they were saying as a little joke, which I thought was kind of interesting for them to put in there.
You know,
because they had a lot of people write in about it.
Yeah, it is. It's sad is what it is that – I mean, over 50% of Americans, I think close to 55 or 56% of Americans don't know how HIV is transmitted today.
And that, in this day and age, that's unacceptable.
It is unacceptable. And it's... But it will lead directly to something like this happening again. So
okay, well, we are down to 7 minutes. Let's move on to the next two so we could...
Yeah, because I can keep going on about this one.
Yeah. The next one was February 12, 2008, and condom-free sex is what they're questioning. Controversial Swiss declaration. Of course, the Swiss seem to be very controversial.
That's the one. That's the one that I was talking about, yeah, because I knew it was down here someplace. But again... It was about HIV. They were talking about heterosexual sex, and they were saying that the Swiss Federal Commission for HIV/AIDS declared HIV positive people with undetectable viral loads sexual non-infectiousness under certain circumstances. So. He's saying that, okay, well, you know, if you're HIV positive and you have, again, we talked about this at the very beginning of the evening, that if it's undetectable, then you can have condom-free sex. Like, oy vey. I mean, just, again, oy vey, slap to the head.
Right. Use
oy
a condom.
Vey.
All right, and the last one here is a UNAIDS task force fights HIV travel ban.
Right. That one was the big one. They're trying to fight travel bans all over the world. Now, you know, it was just last year that the United States wrote and finally lifted its travel ban. When does it go into effect?
The United States
this year? Yeah. I can't remember when it went into effect, but they signed it. But Bush actually signed it into law, so saying that it's okay for HIV-positive travelers to enter the United States. Australia, they still have a travel ban. So if you're HIV positive and you want to go to Australia, think about shipping your meds first because they could reject you from coming into the country. Saudi Arabia has a travel ban. Iran has a travel ban. I think Iraq has a travel ban. So the bans were first put in place back in the 80s when no one really knew what was going on with the virus. They didn't really know how it was spread at the time. So they said, if you have it, you can't come into the country. And which made sense at the time. Because
not so
it was
much
an
anymore.
Effect, you know, not so much anymore. I mean, you would be, yeah, it's just, I mean, come on.
This doesn't make any sense. So I'm glad that they're getting on board and going to move that along. I did find this one real quick one I'd like to share with you, Jeremy. I know it's not on the list, but I thought it was kind of interesting. And since this radio show is a part of, you know, the PosAM community and it's a social network, I thought it was kind of cool. They say that many teens display risky behavior on MySpace. They did a study and they found out that the majority of teenagers who have a MySpace account are displaying risky behaviors in public way that is accessible to general audience. So in other words, they surveyed 500 randomly chosen 18-year-olds on MySpace. Among the profiles viewed, 54% mentioned some risk behavior, including 41% for substance abuse, 24% for sexual behavior, and 14% for violence. Reporting a sexual orientation other than straight was associated with increased display of references of sexual behavior. In the second study, the team identified 190 young adults, 18 to 20, whose MySpace profile displayed multiple risk behaviors. So what they're saying is these kids are out there using these MySpace and Facebooks and things like that and putting things up there that are putting them at risk, and they're showing this to the people. And it's kind of interesting that with the young people – it's not interesting. It's sad that the young people are moving ahead like this.
Well, and along those – along those lines, this whole abstinence only, it's not working. I mean, because a lot of teenage girls are engaging in anal and oral sex in order to keep to remain a virgin, and resigning these apps, you know, these chastity chastity promise things.
Promise rings, like the Jonas Brothers.
Yeah, that, whatever it is. they're engaging in anal and oral sex, and because they don't think it's sex. Kids aren't being taught about sex anymore. They never were.
You know what, that's a great thing that we can actually do for the next show, Jeremy, on next Sunday. We can actually do a show about how abstinent only practices
doesn't
are not
work.
Working and how we need to do things differently. So give yourself a little shout out before we log out here because we're down to the last minute.
Are we? Boy,
yeah.
That went by quick. I thought you were just shutting me up. everybody, if you want to get a come up, check me out at www.positivelyspeaking.com. That's positively with a Z.com. And would love to have you come by. I'm actually working on a new blog post, so I'll be getting that out in the next day or two. So, but stop by and send me a note at jeremy@positivelyspeaking.com, and I'd love to talk with you.
Absolutely, and you can always check me out and some other members that you see in the chat room at the PosIM community, and you can check that out at www.posim.com. It's a social networking website for people infected and affected by HIV and AIDS, and this radio show is one way to reach out. And also, in February, real quick, we're going to actually be having the PosIM radio two times a week, and you'll be able to tune in to the PosIM radio show on Wednesdays as well at 2 p.m. And my co-host, I'm going to announce at a later date, but I just wanted to let you know that that's something we'll be looking into as well. So if you miss us one day, you can get us the other day. Other than that, everyone, thanks for tuning in tonight. And I hope you have a great week. Talk to you later, Jeremy.
I hope you guys have a great week, too. Have a good night. Bye now.
Bye-bye.